It's really nice to see everybody again. Thank you, kids, for all you've done to serve us today. It's been very nice. I feel like it's warmer up here than it is down there, but maybe just because I was standing in the spotlight just a moment ago. So we'll see how this works. You know, we've been a while since we've been together, you and me, a year and a half or two, something like that. We haven't been totally separated, though, since we last met. My associate, Pete, associates with you all with some regularity, so he kind of keeps me updated on you, and I guess you on us. I don't know how that phrase worked, but anyways, yes. Plus, we've got the web, where nothing is secret anymore. In fact, you're sort of shamed if you don't know everything about everyone. What, you didn't know we got a new puppy? We posted it on Facebook. I mean, you're supposed to know this stuff. I did check out your Facebook page, of course, before coming. What a nice profile picture you've got. Sort of the earth, maybe all of you have seen it, maybe some of you haven't, but check it out. The earth sort of surrounded by space. You know, it's just so sort of the fragility and the beauty of this fine planet of ours. So very nice job with that. Wish mine was that sharp. And you may know some things about me. You may know I've got a new grandbaby named River. You do now anyway, but you might have known that from Facebook before. And you may already know that things are going well with our organization if you track us in some way or another, New Community Project. Pete's doing great work here in Starkesboro area. We get a lot of interest around the country, actually, in our work. He got me itinerated to a couple of colleges here at UVM just day before yesterday. A lot of kids want to think about how they could be involved with the things we're working on. And I told them, if we're not doing something that connects with you college kids, we're not doing something right. And I would say the same thing about everybody in this room today. If we're not doing something that connects with these kids, as well as to you old people, we're not doing something right. So those are sort of our reference groups, you might say, as we have others as well, nature, native people, that sort of thing. So Pete's doing great work here, being connected to congregations, community organizations, schools, other places. Also, climate refugees. I was up here last October for our board meetings. We held them there at Pete's place in Starkesboro. And while we were there, we met a woman from Malawi. I had to look it up on the map, kids. In southern Africa, we met a woman from Malawi in southern Africa. Her name was Taona Makunje, and she was being hosted by 350.org, the group that sponsored the march yesterday. And there was a reason for that, because this woman, climate change is messing with things in her country, in Malawi. In fact, they can't grow corn and beans and things that they used to grow because it's too hot and dry these days. And so people are starting to make charcoal. And I don't know if you know anything about charcoal making. It's those little bricks you use to cook stuff in the summertime on the grill. But you cut down trees to make that. And so they're cutting down trees. It's hot, dark, dirty work if you've ever seen charcoal being made. And plus, it's massive deforestation, which is not good for the local environment as well as the global climate. And so she's looking for help. And our people, not me so much, but Pete and our associate in Virginia know something about this. And so we're taking my friend in Virginia and I are going there next month, actually, to see how we can be supportive of what they're trying to do to keep hope alive in southern Africa. Plus, they just got whammed by that cyclone. Maybe you heard about that. So, and then the climate march that came through here, speaking of climate and the effect it's having around the world, thank you all for hosting that. Everybody needs support in this world. And whether or not you walked, or you might walk next year, the fact that you're part of the network that keeps this dream alive for people, keeps them going in the direction they're going. Not even Jesus and his band lived off manna from heaven. I think it says in Luke, there was a network of mostly women who cared for them out of their means. We all need that surrounding cloud of witnesses that's going to help us move our cause along. And these people doing the support work, including providing your facility, is as important as anything else that goes on. Those people needed a place to sleep last night. Yeah. So we need each other on this journey. As you remember Neil Diamond, some of you will, the road is long with many a winding turn. And we need accompaniment on the journey. Globally, we walk this road together. We have an upcoming learning tour to Myanmar. Do you know what country, what continent, Burma, it's also called Burma. Do you know what continent Burma's on? Starts with an A, has four letters. Asia, nice going. So we're going to Myanmar, otherwise known as Burma, next month. And there, the military government's kind of gone now. And so the world has stopped doing its boycott. We weren't doing business with them because they had military guys running the place. Like you guys are getting rid of your Methodist hymnals. Anyway, they had military guys running the place, but now the military guys aren't running it, so people are moving in, the companies are moving in, and they're getting young women, they're opening up the maquilas, the sweatshops, the clothing factories, where they're paying these women 40 cents an hour to make our stuff. The CEOs of these clothing corporations make $11,000 to $17,000 an hour sitting in a corner office in New York, and they're paying these women on the bottom end 40 cents an hour to do the stuff. So, you know, I guess meet the old new boss same as the old boss. These military guys, well, the corporations, well. Yeah, either way it goes. I'll show you some photos during Sunday school about how we're working with groups there to help these women find a new boss themselves. Very important around the world. Biotically, we're on the same road as most of the rest of God's creation, of course. And as we inflict damage on the earth, as we talked about during children's story, it suffers. And as it suffers, so do we in the long run, as we all know in this room. It comes back on us. It will haunt us, these changes we're causing to God's creation around us. I'm back living where I grew up in Blue Ridge, Virginia, after 40 years on the lam. But I'm back home, and I remember as a kid, when we make our every other week trip to Roanoke on Friday night to get groceries at the Micromac, local chain, at the Micromac, we'd come home with bugs on the windshield, and we'd be greeted in the backyard by blinking lightning bugs. Neither now. If you get our newsletter, and some of you may, there's some on the table downstairs, you'll read that the world has lost 80% of its flying insects. You can imagine all the reasons. I don't have to tell anybody in the room about that. I'm going to ask you guys. So why do you think there are less insects? Exactly right. And if we keep taking these things out of God's earth that kind of play important roles, we're all going to be in trouble one of these days. So we've actually got what we call a Lawns to Ladybugs program we just launched, where we'll give a little grant to congregations that want to turn some of their cut lawn into like butterfly habitat or something like that. So you guys, it could be a project. Let's say. So where do we start? Pollinators, pollution, sweatshops, songbirds, so much to do, so little time as you look around us. But maybe we can take our cue from a girl, fifth grader, actually, that I was with. I was with last November or something like that in Wichita, Kansas. So I'm speaking in classes there, the fourth graders and the fifth graders. Fourth graders, I talk about the environment. Then when they grow up to be fifth graders, we talk about kids around the world. And so what I do is I get in front of class and I draw. I say, what does every kid in the world need to be happy and healthy? And so I draw a stick figure up on the board, and then as they say things, I put things up. They say food. They say shelter, I put a house around them. They say friends, I draw another stick figure, that sort of stuff. But one girl said something I've never heard anybody say in that situation before. She said, they say that sometimes, but that's a good one. She said, attention, that every child needs to be noticed. Somebody needs to know they're there. So I thought that kind of seemed like us, but our work probably seems like you and your work, helping all of us pay more attention to the things around us that some people maybe want to avoid. So, where am I? I'm sorry. Why is that where you and I? Yes. Unless we feel inundated as we cast our attention afield by all the things that we see around us that could use our attention, and you know there's lots that we could pay attention to in this world, I think the more we see, the more we might be able to focus. In other words, from the panoply comes the particular. In other words, the more we see about the mess we're in, the more committed we feel to doing something about it. And that doesn't mean we all have to do everything. We have to find the place that fits our passion or our gifts or that sort of thing. So we pick our battles, but seeing the big scale issues, I think, can focus on the urgency that confronts us in our world today. And you know, you can really look where you will. Now, somehow the guy in our story today missed the mess around him. The mess was lying outside his door with the what licking his sores? Thank you. A little louder with feeling. With the dogs licking his sores. He didn't see Lazarus for whatever reason. I think, distraction, of course. We all get distracted by the clothes, by the things that we need, like you were talking in the story there a few moments ago. And we're pretty good at that. So I'm going to update Lazarus to our time. And I think really what he was suffering from was environmental injustice, if you think about it, okay? I'm framing this a little different way for today, but it seemed to make a little sense to me as Jared told me kind of what he was interested in me talking about, and I thought about this story to match it maybe. So first of all, he obviously lacks shelter. So why do sometimes people lack shelter? So all those things are reasons that people have to leave their homes, and including the environment, which we all kind of talked about here, as we mess with the world, people sometimes can't live where they live. The migrant caravans, you've been reading this, I'm sure, migrant caravans can't grow corn and beans in Central America anymore. They're heading to El Norte. We want to blame it on all kinds of other things. We don't want to take responsibility for the mess we're making of the environment around the world and the way it's affecting people in Southern Africa, as I was saying, but also in Central America. Second, Lazarus is not well. Open sores. Now, we don't know the cause of his sores in those days, but we can also think in our own environmental situation, 1 out of 1,000 people is going to die from air pollution this year around the world. Pollution going up in the air, often people cooking over indoor cook fires. In the poor world, their home is about as big as this part of the church right up here where I'm standing, and to cook your food, you've got wood on the ground, and you light a fire, and you're cooking over the lit fire with a metal plate on top, maybe, or a few rocks around, and of course, you're breathing that smoke. So a lot of people, about half of that 1 out of 1,000 dies from indoor pollution, the other half from outdoor pollution. Water, we're going to Nepal next January. Love to have some of you with us, by the way. Trafficking issues and all that stuff. I'll show you some pictures downstairs. Anyway, we're going to Nepal where 40,000 children die every year from not having clean water. Big problem. We sent some people over to South Sudan, some young people, to volunteer. We sent some volunteers over to South Sudan and Africa to volunteer some summers. Well, they've been there for a couple of weeks maybe, and people feel like they can ask them questions. So one of the young guys in the village asked one of the girls in our group, he said, are people where you live rich? Now, I don't know how you would have answered that. But what she said was, well, there are rich people in America, but not me, not my friends, not my family. He said to her, do you have a flush toilet? Whoosh, you know what I'm talking about? Whoosh. Do you have a flush toilet every time you want one? She said, well, yes. He said, then you are rich. Because almost half the people in the world don't only not have a flush toilet, they don't even have like an outhouse. So when they're going to the bathroom, sometimes that kind of gets mixed in with the water in the stream nearby, and you get sick from that. So just the things that we don't sometimes think about that people in the world have to struggle with, and now our government not only wants to reduce environmental regs in the USA, but we're looking at cutting back foreign aid. Where were you when we needed you? Where am I when I needed me? Here we go. Third, Lazarus was hungry. As we know of 800 million people in our world today, with climate change breathing down our necks, we can expect more food insecurity. Probably the first and lasting impact of climate change will be food insecurity around the world. I just went to preached at a congregation in Cincinnati. So at home, I only have a bike. So I had to rent a car, but I went over to Cincinnati to preach 3 weekends ago or 4, something like that. When I came back through Kentucky. I passed a farm that looked like a fish farm. It was surrounded by water because the river next door had flooded. And you could only see the silo. You could see a barn. Everything else was like a pond all around what was a farm. Then I read that it had been the wettest February in Kentucky, that state I was in then, than ever before. So too much rainfall. Then I noticed when I was passing through that area, they'd cut down a lot of the trees on some of the hillsides. Now, if you cut down the trees on the hillside and it rains really hard, where's the water going to go? Just like that. So the deforestation plus the climate we're messing with, and you've got a fish farm. You know what I'm saying? You've got a fish farm. When you weren't planning to grow fish, maybe. That's what I'm saying. So these things. Where am I? Here, there, everywhere. Conversely, in Uganda, we passed a cornfield May before last, when we were in Uganda going to a refugee, heading to a refugee camp for South Sudanese refugees, the corn was about 6 feet tall. They said it should be twice as tall. This was May. They said we're still waiting on the March rains. When we don't get a little rain in Vermont, down in Virginia, we got corn or something coming from Kansas, from Colorado, from California, from Mexico, for now. And we got the resources to get it here. When their corn doesn't grow, their kids don't grow because they don't have enough food. So, yeah. Meanwhile, the Green New Deal, getting as much derision as it is support. Finally, we can assume Lazarus was poor, which we know limits our ability to have access to the goodness of God's earth. As they said, poverty is one of the causes for homelessness and all kinds of other things. And, you know, it can be a number of causes that we all in this room know. I just read a study, though, that said it can be a genetically inherited something. The poverty mindset can be passed down from parent to child in your genes somehow, which sort of puts you on the back from the get-go. And we can also think of politics, ethnicity, mobility. So last year, right about Easter time, Palm Sunday, like the Sunday before Easter when you guys carry the palm branches in and stuff like that. I'm sort of making that up because I don't really know if you do that. But okay, do we? Okay, fine. So when you carry the palm. So that Sunday, I've been asked to preach at a church down the road about 40 miles from me down in Virginia. A little too far to bike on Sunday morning. I mean, if I was a real biker, I could have done it, I guess. But, you know, I'm sort of a sissy. So anyways, I didn't bike. But I had to get a rental car. So what I do is on the Saturday before the Sunday when I have to preach, I bike to the airport, which is 15 miles away. I get the rental car. I put my bike in the back. I take the rental car home, then do the church thing the next day, then reverse it, take the rental car back to the airport with my bike in the back and bike home the next day, back home. See what I'm saying? That's how I get a rental car. I know it's confusing. Okay, so I'm coming out of town with the rental car. I see a person walking along the road. And it's a part of the road that I know about because on my bicycle, I have to stay on the sides of the road. And on that particular side of the road, it's really rough and lots of thick gravel and stuff that my little bicycle with the little tires, I would just boom, do like that. So I have to actually ride on the other side of the road there for a while. Plus, it had just started to snow. It had just started to snow. So here's a person walking on that rough gravel, and it's snowing, and I've got a car. I never have a car. I'm on a bicycle. I can't pick somebody up on my bicycle. And so I thought, yes, I'll stop and give them a ride. So I pulled in up ahead of them, about 100 yards ahead of them. I hopped out of the car. I called back and said, hey, need a ride. I noticed it was a woman, and I was also dressed in my bicycle stuff. You know what I'm saying? The bright top, the tights. I looked a little weird, honestly. But she started jogging. I took that for a yes. And so I got back in the car, opened the passenger side drawer. She got in. It was an African-American woman, a black woman. Her name was Joyce. I said, where are you going? She said, to the Kroger store, the grocery store. I said, working or shopping? She said, working. I said, you couldn't take the bus? She said, no, it stops back there. And I remembered the bus actually stops about a half mile back. So every day when she comes to work, she has to walk like the last mile and a half to get to work, even on the rough road, even when it's snowing. So we got to the store. It was just a couple minutes to get there by car. Pulled up to the storefront. She started to get out. I said, have a good day. She said, please pray for me. So I don't know what was her situation. I mean, she's an African-American woman. Things don't go so well sometimes when you're a different race in our society. But also, I realized that day that I used to think about having buses as an important thing for the environment that get us out of our cars and into one bus so it doesn't take as much pollution, you know, and gas and stuff to get us around. But I realized that day it's also a justice issue. How do we expect the poor to provide for their families on the meager income that we either give them as a government or they get themselves if they got no way to get from here to there? So I realized that, you know, that was a moment of attention raising for me, frankly, something I hadn't thought about before. Just because of the happenstance of that situation, I realized another dynamic I hadn't thought about previously. So we pulled into the lot this morning just as the marchers were leaving. You saw them yesterday. Some of the rest of you did too. A motley crew. Endearing, yes, but a motley crew. I mean, adults, kids, bicycles, chanters, drummers, stanchions, whatever you call that, flags. And, you know, I got to thinking, what a small band against so great a foe. Why are they marching? Even against such great odds? Why do you got your food box out there? Why are you sending your kids off earning money from leaf raking to go in a service practice this summer when it seems like the mood of our country and our world is to let them figure it out themselves? Well, yes, I guess small is beautiful. We can fall back on that one. We like to say that at New Community Project. We also say mighty, but small is beautiful. But I would also say to you, small is mighty. I would say small is not only beautiful, but small is mighty. And I thought as we walked back to the fellowship hall after seeing the marchers process away, I thought of David and Goliath. And you know, that's often portrayed as some kid with a Nerf gun up against, you know, heavy weapons. Well, no. If you think about David in that situation, David brought things to this confrontation with this 9-foot giant, by the way. That's what the Bible says. David, a little scrawny shepherd boy, brought things to this battle with this 9-foot giant that maybe brought him some advantage. Dexterity, unconventional weaponry, refusal to be daunted by so large a foe, and he had a cause to defend the life and dignity of his people. Those things are in our corner, people. As they march, as you put out your stuff, as the kids go off into wherever they're going, those things are on our corner. And I think Jesus, I had to think of Jesus in this Lenten season, seemingly done in by powers much larger and stronger than he. But no, the third day had the final say. And before you know it, he was breaking bread on the lakeshore with his peeps, which we'll model here in a few minutes in our service. And so we turn our eyes to our world, to Lazarus and his kind, to earth and its kind, undaunted, knowing the seeds we sow take root and grow in God's own time and in surprising ways, for the glory of God, for our neighbor's good, for the healing of all creation, and of we ourselves. Amen.